Good morning and welcome to episode 68 of Taking the Charge podcast. Happy New Year. Welcome to 2014. With you from Regensburg, Germany, David Hein of Hein News. And as always.
Hi, this is Oz Davis of BallinEurope.com coming to you from Budapest, Hungary. Happy New Year from Hungary as well. Boldog újévet. Even.
Boleg.
Boleg. No, we're not going to do this again.
Is it the same word, though?
Bulldog.
But that one's
not. I know I'm killing it. I know I'm offending the Hungarian listeners right now. But
listeners or a listener?
Yeah. My Hungarian listener. Hi, Mom. No, my mom's not Hungarian, I'm going to say.
Your mom doesn't listen to the show either.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Yes, 2014, we are there in podcast world.
Yes.
This is part two of the look back at 2013. So really quick before we do that, please, head to iTunes, rate and review us. Let us know what you think of the show. Send us questions, comments, concerns, top 20 stories of 2013 that we may have missed, and why you are mad that we didn't include them. You can send us emails at hinnews@gmx.de. Catch me on Twitter at hinnews. And, of course, there's the Facebook group. Just put in Taking the Charge and say, I want to come into the party, and we will let you in. Our doorman is may look mean, but he's not mean at all. He just
our virtual doorman.
And Oz is available.
Yes, you can check us out at BallinEurope.com. The Twitter feed is BIE_basketball. These are under the eminent guidance of Emmett Ryan. And please check out our Facebook page, Taking the Charge.
Okay, so let's continue on the group, onto the top 20. Obviously, last week, if you missed it, go back and listen. Top 20 stories of 2013. We are at number 10. We're going to start it off with Asia Basket, the Asia Basketball Championship, and with a story that will actually have an impact on one of our later points was China crashing out at Asia Basket. Obviously Iran took the title.
Good for them.
China. We had Pete Filo on a few weeks ago. Was kind of talking to us about how things are less than good right now in China. Lost to Chinese Taipei in the quarterfinals. Iran beat Philippines, and then China and Chinese Taipei. Played in the third place game. So the main point for China in our eyes, one of the main points was the fact that China crashed out. It seems like even though we talked last week about the U19, you know, doing well, placing seventh at the World Championship there. They seem to be lacking this next step right now, and this was Yi's team and didn't totally live up to the expectations. You know, the tournament
didn't totally live up to the expectations. After this tournament, I was kind of hoping that I could that I was wishing that I could read Chinese, so maybe we should talk to our friend at newbball.com. But I'm sure that this thing is being played up in Chinese sports media as a national tragedy. I'm sure that they're taking this very seriously. Now, I don't know. Maybe the problems that were described in our podcast of a few weeks ago are too endemic, are too fundamental to the system at this point in order to change things. Again, you know, I would guess that a lot of this is organizational issues. We understand that the scouting program is leagues behind, you might say, leagues behind other countries. So you wonder if they can address this issue. However, I'm sure it is being taken very seriously. It's just a question of, you know, can these problems be fixed? Of course, you know, just the presence of it being China, all in capital letters, that we'll probably see them again in the World Cup. And one wonders if, you know, given the financial and economic impact that a Chinese basketball bid has, you wonder if this knowledge is actually going to prevent, you know, the sort of massive improvements, you know, the implementation of changes that are necessary. You wonder if just, you know, the Chinese Basketball Federation sits back and go, well, we're always going to get the wild card, so.
And the thing is they can't mess around in Asia because, you know, Iran is putting together some pretty good performances. You know, we didn't really talk about the U19 team there, but there was two or three guys there that were pretty interesting players there. You know,
yeah,
they've won the Asian Championship in three of the last four tournaments.
I can tell you that in terms of hard news, the Iranian, you know, cultural ministry is dead serious about becoming, you know, world level competitors in most major sports, including, you know, basketball. So these guys are not going anywhere. It's pretty hard, I think, to dominate the FIBA Asia tournament year after year. But I think that, you know, this team is going to be, you know, a benchmark in tournaments to come. I think this is a great program. Apparently, reportedly, by all accounts, a great league, a great national league that they have there, development programs, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, you know, China needs to be, maybe they're not looking over their shoulder at this point. Maybe they're looking ahead at Iran, but these guys are going nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, in 2009,
international scene.
2009, they beat China.
Yes.
In the final.
Yeah. That was the signal. That was the signal. We're here. We're gunning for a top 10 standing in the world.
Well, yeah. I mean, you have to think that they had actually won in 2007 already. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. and so, you know, and 2009. I guess Yao had already. Already hung him up, but
yeah, I was not on that team.
You know, but so. 2013 Asia Basket Champions. Congratulations to Iran. China, we will see you with a wild card, is I think pretty safe to say. You have anything else for that one, or?
Well, we'll see you in the World Cup, and let's hope that we see some visible improvement there too.
Yeah, yeah. It seems to me that the coaching is a big thing for them, that they have to find somebody who the coach has some authority, is what I kind of got read out of the entire situation.
You know, has some cachet. I mean, you know, has some pull. I mean, there's a very I've read things on, and it's not quite the same situation, but I've read things on Americans who play Japanese professional baseball, and you know, the Utah culture clash, it's there. There are different priorities here. There are different ways to gain respect of players and things like this. And of course, you know, you mentioned Yao before, and it's like even something fundamental as that, you know, you hear these stories about how when he was a youth player, and under American guidance, he refused to dunk the ball. you know, because in China, that's thought to be too showy. You know, especially if you're clearly the tallest guy on the court, you know, I mean, fundamental stuff like that gets in the way of, you know, sending a guy like Blatt over there to take the team over and really shape something, you know. So it will come, but it's going to take a very special person. Yeah, it's going to take like a Phil Jackson type, you know, somebody who's into, you know, Eastern sort of, you know, somebody who's more open to a new way of thinking. You know, is Bill Walton available? Does he want this job? I mean, you know, so somebody who can kind of see things another way. And of course, you know, for basketball coaches, this is tough. I mean, their whole lives they've been so intense on their way of doing things that, you know, this is a tough bridge. This is a tough bridge to cross.
As deep of a crash China experience, I think just as high that the Mexicans are on after this past summer, they won the FIBA Americas Championship down in Caracas, Venezuela. And I mean, you have to kind of put this into historical perspective. They haven't been to the Olympics since 76. They haven't been to, they didn't even qualify for the FIBA Americas in 11.
Wow.
And their top showing was sixth place back in 13, in 2003. And by winning by winning the FIBA Americas, they qualified for the World Championship, now World Cup, for the first time since 1974. And you know,
so we can safely say that this is their best show of the modern era.
This is probably their best showing ever.
Yeah.
It's the first time they ever won the FIBA Americas. You look at fifth place, in 84 and 80. Since then, that was the top showing, you know.
How much can we put this to the crash out, the flame out of the South American powers?
You have to mention it, you know. Okay, but you also have to say, though, that along the way, you know, they took down Argentina in
yes.
the semifinals.
Yes.
Know? They beat Puerto Rico in the final.
Yes, always a tough tournament team.
You know, they lost to Canada in the first game of the second round. Again, this is like, you know, you have to be careful about the games you lose and the games you don't win or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, they lost by 22 to Canada, and it didn't affect them. Canada ended up losing the rest of their games in the second round and didn't advance. Just looking to see if they ended up beating the Dominican Republic as well. So it looks like they actually beat Puerto Rico twice.
Yeah, Dominican Republic was on the other side of the bracket.
Well, no, they were in the group with them, in the second group with them.
Right.
Where is this result here? Or were they in the first group even with them? Yes, they were in the first group with them. So let's see. So they beat Venezuela. So they beat the hosts in the first game. And then lost, then beat Paraguay by 20. Which isn't necessarily saying anything, and then beat Dominican Republic by 24, and then I guess they lost by 20 to Argentina in the final game of the first round, where they had already basically advanced. So, all right, who is this? Who is this team? You know, basically, and you look at the names, you're gonna be like, okay, well, who are they? So they have Gustavo Ayan, who is with the, I guess, the Atlanta Hawks, is that right?
I believe so.
Yeah. Atlanta Hawks. And then there's Jorge Gutierrez, who played at California Berkeley, who I guess was in the D League a little bit after going undrafted. So yeah, I guess Canton Orn charge. So, and those are two bigger names.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have, there's Paul Stoll, who's a, I guess, playing at Maccabi Haifa. But really, that's about it, you know? They have a Spanish coach, Sergio Valdemelos, which I really just butchered really bad, but that's okay. But you're looking at, okay, Argentina didn't have all their guns. Brazil, who obviously crashed out. Brazil, we forgot actually Brazil, but let's throw Brazil into this one. You know, they crashed out as well, but they were also missing some of their players. So, I mean, Brazil didn't even make it out of the first round.
Well, okay, but look.
They lost to even Jamaica.
The New Year's resolution for 2014 is we have to stop, like, you know, prefacing stuff with injuries and they didn't have all their players, because that's going to be the way it is going forward.
Bring your squads.
Yeah.
That comes later as well, right?
I mean, everybody's going to be missing players in future. Everybody. And so we're not really going to consider that. But the truth is that all things being equal, let's say you bring a team where, you know, 10 of your guys are playing in South American Super League, another couple of guys are playing in NBA. You don't have two of your NBA guys. Okay, shouldn't you still win that tournament? I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you know, Italy over here, you know, they could bring three NBA guys. They bring two NBA guys. Shouldn't that be enough to compete? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, you're missing a couple of your top level guys. I bet you still got a couple of top level guys still there. And in the future, that's going to be more than a lot of teams have with this crazy broken format.
That's coming soon.
So let's bypass that. What I wonder is, does this make any effect on the Mexican sporting lineup, face at all? I mean, this is a country where, you know, football, soccer is number one. Baseball is also well-loved in most major cities in Mexico. You know, does this make a dent at all?
I think so. I think it's a sporting culture that will gladly take somebody in. You know, I remember, who's the guy with Denver in the NBA? Yeah, you know, I'm sure.
That was my first impression when they took this tournament is, wow, this happened about 10 years too late. Yeah. You know, otherwise they could have gotten the Nowitzki effect, you know, where you have your NBA guy and, you know, you have success in the international tournament. It's too bad this didn't happen when I believe Mexico's only major NBA player. Certainly their only starter or sixth man from the country. It would have been nice to see those kind of two things converge, but who knows? I mean, probably he'll be doing publicity for this thing at home when it comes down to tournament time. Maybe that will help a little bit. You know that Mexico has a lot of basketball fans. I mean, you know, the NBA plays games down there.
Unless there's too much smoke in the
room. Right. They tried to this year until, you know, somebody showed up with too many cigars or something.
Last year.
this season, technically last calendar year. Don't get pedantic, Dave. So you know, this is a market, and NBA has been trying to appeal to Spanish-speaking audience more and more and more. So this is a viable market. I believe that there are millions of, you know, proper basketball fans there. Let's just see if this expands basketball in that country's sports horizon a little bit.
So congratulations to Mexico.
Yes. The short story is congratulations to Mexico for the historic tournament win.
And we will see you next year. We'll see you this year, this summer, at the 2014 FIBA Basketball World Cup. Moving on to story number 8. I suppose we could just say the question was, who was going to actually end up being the number one pick of the NBA draft?
Yeah. How exciting, how interesting. I mean, not a lot of you know, maybe what you would consider superstar names in that first round, but just what intrigue. What a nice draft in here. You have teams like really with the option to address needs if given. Now, that's not going to prevent, you know, certain squads from messing up. But very, very nice draft in this respect. Very nice draft from the respect of the number of international players. Quite a few taken.
I think it was a record for the first round, right? Wasn't it?
Yes, or maybe overall. I'm not exactly. Although there were like crazy amounts taken in the draft.
11 in the first round.
Yeah, that's got to be a record. That including all time highs for Ukraine, New Zealand, Senegal,
probably Greece.
Yeah, a few other countries. Yeah, Giannis goes at number 15. But just what an interesting draft in that we didn't know exactly what was going to happen. I think that this year we'll get the same thing. I think that the number one overall. Okay. This will probably be Wiggins, if not, it'll be a situation where we had to address the need. Who's ever at number one, and Wiggins will go at two. So I don't think there's going to be too much suspense there. But going down the line, wow!
You look at Nerlens Noel, who ended up actually going six. Okay, he had the injury, but he was probably widely considered really kind of like the number one guy.
He was the inside track. Yeah, he was the inside track going in. But
some people actually even had Macklemore maybe even going number one. He ended up at seven. Porter, some people said, okay, yep. Could maybe go one. I don't think really anybody had Zeller. Nobody really had Oladipo really at one.
People were looking at that.
Len, because of his size, they were talking about maybe him going number one.
Yes. Well, the number one team was Cleveland. And one of the reasons why Otto Porter was getting so much hype before the draft is because they liked him in that three spot for Cleveland. But Cleveland, I think history will show they ultimately did the right thing taking Bennett, who's a 2-3, and I think this guy is going to have a long career in the NBA. I think ultimately they did make the right pick, even though when it came down, for the first time in God knows how long, there was this shock from the audience in the NBA draft, auditorium, I guess you would call it. It'll be interesting, this draft as well in 2014, for you got to wonder if the audience is going to boo Adam Silver. In past drafts, they have cheered for him because he does the second round. But now he's going to be in the position of the heavy and thus have to announce the number one overall pick in the draft.
Yeah.
What an entrance for Mr. Silver to be presiding over the draft. Great year for the draft.
Yeah. Bennett is more of a 4-3 than a 2-3. So, but regardless.
Oh, sorry. That's what I meant. 3-4.
You look at the top and there's still some questions. I don't know if Zeller's really going to, Zeller has been playing. Has he been playing very well? I mean, obviously he went to the train wreck that is the Charlotte Bobcats, but I wonder how this, especially the top part of it, is going to stack up in the long run. You look at, really kind of way down at 11 with Michael Carter-Williams, who, when he's been healthy, he's been a triple-double threat for the 76ers.
Oh, this guy's been Fantasy Rookie of the Year.
Well, I wouldn't say that because he hasn't played enough. Exactly.
He has been a stat machine for Philadelphia.
Giannis, who we'll touch on in a second, again, he's actually been pretty productive. Schroeder, is he gonna? I think his best is still to come. He got sent down to the D League, but I know he got brought back up. I wonder if some of these guys further down are going to be more productive than the top. I don't know that.
There's typically this mix. I think Giannis,
this would be definitely an interesting draft in like two, three, four years to look at.
Yeah, the best drafts always are. The best drafts are the ones you look back in 3 years and say, how could they take,
just to see where they were,
there's guys at the bottom that are viable. I mean, coming out of this thing, people are shocked that Tim Hardaway Jr. is going at 24. Andre Robertson's going at 26. I mean, Shane Larkin at 18. He could have gone higher. He could have gone lower. It's just crazy interesting draft. Like I say, this year, same thing. This year, same thing.
I wanted to touch on Giannis Antetokounmpo. I found that the 13 fascinating for him. You know, when you consider that, you know, I remember I was sitting with a scout in Bamberg, and you know, this was like, oh, this must have been February or something like that, and he said, you know, there's this guy down in Greece playing in the second division, you know, he's pretty good, you know, and okay, cool, you know, I was like, you know, wow, you know, I was thinking like maybe 2-3 years, you know, that, you know, because Greek second division is pretty low level. I mean, the kid's 94 born, so he, you know, he was 19 at the time, you know, he was a young 19, but he had, you know, I guess he's turned 19, so he's 18, at the time.
He's 19.
But how quick that he went from an absolutely nobody to being a lottery. Did he end up being a lottery? I guess not.
He actually ended up 15. 15, so. Yeah. Right after,
edge of the lottery.
Yeah.
It was just blew my mind that you know, that the hype machine can grow that fast. You know, I guess, you know, when he turned 18 in December, you know, however they found him, but the, you know, Saragossa signed him to a 4-year deal. So, you know, they spotted him somewhere.
Well, yeah. See, this is the thing. This is the thing.
But the thing is, the thing that is amazes me more than anything. Sorry, just real quick. The thing that amazes me more than anything else is that not even the big teams saw this kid in Greece. You know, Olympiakos didn't see him. Panathinaikos didn't see him. You know, Aris didn't see him. Panionios didn't see them. You know, none of these guys had him. He was playing for Philadelphia, whatever, you know, he wasn't even playing for you know, in the system of one of these big teams, and to think that you know, it had to be basically Saragossa coming in and finding this guy, right under the noses of teams like of Olympiakos and Panathinaikos and Panionios, who really have, I mean, especially Panionios and Aris, you know, they have to live off these guys. You know, these are the guys that they want to find and develop, you know, and let them develop, and then they could sell them off to help you know, continue their livelihood of their club. And then Olympiakos, I'm sure them and Panathinaikos are just kicking themselves in the ass, saying, "How did we miss this guy?" You know?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the blind spot was, because here's the thing about Giannis. You know, his nickname now is, well, some folks are calling him the Greek freak. And the thing is, you look at this guy and he's a physical specimen. I mean, Draft Express may be responsible for some of the discovery of this kid, because they did a great piece on him where most of it was just them measuring his wingspan and his fingers and things like this, and just, you know, explaining that this guy was off the charts in these areas. You know, he was above like the highest, you know, the longest wingspan seen at the combine, you know, stuff like this, just crazy stuff like this. So that I think just to see this guy is the first step. Now after that, I don't know. I don't know what the Greek teams were thinking, that they were thinking that, you know, he would never jump to the NBA, that he just wouldn't be discovered, already stashed there, you know, sort of a self-perpetuating.
They have their own youth clubs. He was 18. They could have stuck him. One of those teams could have stuck him in their sure. youth system. I mean, there's no, and you know, he was born in Athens. You know, there's no reason for this guy to go, and his brother played too, you know, I mean,
yes.
There had to be somebody who had seen these guys that could have said, you know, hey, you know,
people who could have said it. You wonder why they didn't.
That's what I wonder. How did this guy go unnoticed for that long?
That's the blind spot.
Or if they didn't, why do you not even just take a chance on it? You know, I mean, Why do you just if nothing else, just look on the athleticism of the guys that you could see, okay, he might be raw, whatever. You know, I'm not saying that these guys are raw, him and his brother, but I'm just saying, if nothing else, you take a look and you say, all right, let's just take a chance. Let's just bring him
Yeah,
in, let's see what he does.
exactly. You know, he's the kind of guy you look at and go, do you play basketball? Because you have a body built for
That's
basketball.
exactly. You're a goalkeeper. You're a goalkeeper, huh? You want to come over and play basketball?
Yeah,
Yeah, exactly. So, and obviously, 2013, you also saw him finally get the Greek citizenship, which then allowed him to play for the national team, and he played at the U20s. But for me, this was amazing. This hype machine, the combination of the hype machine and really coming from out of nowhere, and how the Greek powers just didn't find him. You know, so
Yeah.
that's.
Well, I mean, now that you say this thing about the passport, this had slipped my mind. You know, maybe this was the problem. They didn't want to expend a roster spot
Yeah, but
on
if you stick him
non.
in a youth league, I'm sure they have enough spots for a youth
Well, yeah,
player.
one would think you would make one, right? You would make a spot for this guy, assuming that someday he's going to be EU.
Especially since Saragossa couldn't even have him because he didn't have a passport. He couldn't leave the country. Saragossa, they signed him to a deal, but they could not have him over because he didn't have a passport.
Okay, well, we can laugh this one off and say, ha, that's just Greece.
Well, we can't really say that necessarily because Greece has come up with some other good things. But that,
Yeah,
again.
no, Panathinaikos, Olympiakos, they're going to regret this. They're going to regret not having this kid for at least, half a EuroLeague season, I think.
Okay. Story number seven. We're putting it at Juventud, winning the NIJT, the first time ever that they won the NIJT in London. Beat city rivals, Barcelona. And a pretty decently stacked Barcelona team. They killed them in the final, ended up winning by 23.
Yeah,
20.
that was a demoralization. That was, yeah, they took them apart
You know,
early.
that was a pretty decent team. You know, I mean,
Yeah.
you had Hezonja, you had Hakanson, you had Garcia,
Right.
so but yeah, they ended up winning. Alberto Abalde ended up taking the MVP. Agustí Sanz was another big part of that. José Núñez, who actually went on as the only younger underage player, went on to play for Spain at the U19 World Championship. Just the fact that they ended up beating and really just kind of dismantling Big Brothers Barcelona. I mean, Barcelona scored 18 points in the second and third combined. It ended up being 23, but it was th 70 to 37 after three quarters. Just total domination. What did you think? What did you think of the tournament in general, the NIJTs? I mean, you had China, who obviously always it's always nice to see China. Ritos were missing their one of their main players, so they were weakened a bit. Red Star, they had a nice they had at least one good inside player. Intsap's always got some talent. Spars had some good players as well. What do you think?
Well, I thought it
And
was.
then Team England, who had a good group as well.
Yeah, I wanted to say going in that, we've covered a few youth tournaments in our top 20 list, but probably this one takes the cake because of, the monkey on the back factor. Juventud Badalona rises to supremacy once again, at least for 2013, over their rival Barcelona. I was kind of hesitant to take this story of being the story of the NIG tournament as opposed to Team China, which appeared to bring, how many players did they bring that first game? Like four?
I think they had six for the first game.
Yeah, I'm exaggerating, but geez, those poor guys. And they were trying to hang with, I believe it was Red Star in that
Right.
first game.
Yeah.
We ran into the team on the first day, Dave and I did, and noticed the shortage of players and were told that,
Six, I guess eight guys played. One of them was 22 seconds, so.
They were short. They were looking. The bench was looking pretty small on that in that game. And we were told, imagine that, visa problems had prevented the other players from playing. But I like this tournament in general because, I mean, as you just said, you just gave the rundown. But this was a nice level playing field. There wasn't. I mean, aside from Barcelona, who was pretty much, I think, assumed to be the favorite for this thing. There wasn't really, I mean, the level of competition was very stratified. Of course, we didn't know anything about Team China, and only the real devotees knew about some of these, second teamers on Team England. But it was
England had a pretty good roster, actually, though. England did have a pretty good roster. I mean, Nelson was there.
At the top, I liked their squad, but towards the end of that bench, I think you had to dig deep into the knowledge banks to recall those guys. But just in general, I thought it was a really nice level playing field. I think that this was really close, and I'm glad that somebody besides Barcelona did not win, given the relative parity of this thing going in.
I mean, Barcelona didn't actually qualify. They had one of the four wild cards. So, so congratulations to Joventut Badalona, knocking down the bitter city rivals. Badalona
Yeah,
obviously being
and speaking of knocking off bitter rivals, Barcelona.
yeah, you could say that. You go ahead, why don't you do number six?
Number six, yes. Now we begin, I suppose, the championship portion of our top 20 list, our proper championship portion, by giving a shout out and kudos to Real Madrid, who took their first.
Sorry.
And there was much rejoicing. You sound like the Monty Python guys there. The first Liga Endesa crown, now their first title since 2007. So good for them, and also good for them that they seem to have parlayed this title into one hell of a EuroLeague team going into 2014.
The monkey's off their back now in the league, and I think now that was one of the things that Dante Draper said. Now the focus is on the EuroLeague, and hey, you know what? They might even win the they might even win the Liga Endesa this year as well. Just
Yeah,
even
it's
quote the focus isn't on that. I mean, they haven't won the EuroLeague since '95, so.
you look at that number, that 2007, and you go, wow, really? 6 years between titles? I mean, I know that Thiago Splitter and Baskonia won it 1 year in there, but really? It's been that long? And so I mean, it's good to see a top program back on top.
Yeah, Barcelona, Baskonia, Barcelona, Real Madrid. Yeah, knocked off Barcelona in the final 3-2, and after getting the revenge from 3-2 in 12.
In another great championship series, too.
Yeah. Live basketball TV. Come on, get the Liga Endesa on there, so that we can watch it a lot easier and on demand, on
Or at least
demand.
in English,
On
on
de Oh,
demand.
come on! No, it doesn't even have to be in English. Just on
That's
demand.
true. That's true. Yeah. And Spanish commentators for the ACB are fantastic. So when the championship series comes around, you can go to ABC ACB.com, and they'll be streaming them live, for sure.
Yeah, just I think the fact that it had been, I think for that, I mean, they were really, saying we have to finally win this thing, and the EuroLeague is one thing, but we have to finally win the thing at home, and so that's why I figured to put that in there. And I have a feeling they're gonna be up there in our list next in 2000, at the end of 2014 as well.
I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised.
Do you okay? So, I guess we could save this for the next show, but I mean, do you see them losing more than, let's say, three games the rest of the EuroLeague season?
The rest of the season, you mean before the
EuroLeague season.
tournament? Before the tournament, or All things considered.
All things considered.
Three games? Yeah, they can lose three games.
More than three games, I said.
More than three games? That so it is basically an over-under situation. 3.5 games, right? It's tough to take the over on that. It's tough to imagine they would lose four. But in a playoff series, they could drop a couple of games. When do they meet the Fenerbahces? When do they meet the Olympiacos?
Well, we know that group, whatever they were, P, I think. We know that wasn't much of a competition.
No. This was the warm up.
But they're undefeated. But they're undefeated in the league.
Yep.
They're undefeated in the league, and so I mean.
I can imagine that, but I think that's a good benchmark. I think three losses the rest of the way.
We'll have to do that on the quote regular show.
On the third part of our series.
No. That'll be just the regular show. All right. Number
five.
Louisville. We're going to NCAA college hoops. We're taking a look at Louisville knocking off Michigan, and I think you ended up saying that you were okay with calling this was a classic game, the final, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
No, you don't like.
Yeah, my initial reaction to that abrasive post-game hype that follows every championship series game, whatever, that this is the instant classic, it's the greatest ever, whatever. Okay, I bristled.
Yeah, I want to say you did. But.
In consideration, yeah. This was one of the better.
82-76, Louisville knocked off Michigan. It was a phenomenal. It really was a phenomenal game.
Yes, great game.
You know, you had Hancock. You know, Burke. You know, get big time guys coming up and making big time plays.
Yes.
And you look at that box score and you say, oh, there was no defense, but man, that was just a super high quality game on all accounts. I mean, that was probably really one of the best college basketball games I'd seen in. Man, really years. There's obviously, you know, which we touched on last year on the show, you know, there's like a five overtime game and stuff like that, you know, but that sort of had the feeling. And then you have like this championship level fight, you know, there was Michigan. It was this first time that I think they were back in the final since their Fab Five days.
Yes.
You know, and those guys were in the house, although I'm not sure if Weber was there.
Weber was not.
You know, and there's the prestige of the Louisville program. There's the prestige of the Michigan program. It was just a great game. And so that's why, I think I, when I was thinking about, you know, the subject, I'm like, you know what, this really needs to be up there because, you know, there's a lot of future NBA players that played in that game. And there's a lot of the guys who don't play in that. There's going to be some guys that are going to be playing over here in Europe. And so,
Yeah, I wanted to go back to what you said earlier. You know, you look at the line and you say, oh, there wasn't much defense in this game. But that's the thing. Okay, this is an NCAA championship game. And I think that when you see a final line of like 68-58, I think that's not good defense. That's not good defense. That's turnovers.
Yeah.
Because you know, again, this is one thing that typically
21 turnovers in the game total. 21 turnovers.
Right. This is one thing that keeps me away from NCAA tournament. I mean, aside from the fact that my Lobos always get egregiously bounced. Aside from that, I mean, one of the things I don't like is the obvious display of nerves on most of these guys. Now, maybe this time, because you had so many NBA-ready guys, and EuroLeague, let's say, ready guys, that wasn't such a factor. But that's what made this game a great college game, a great college championship game, was the low turnovers. You know, actual, like, pressure, you know, playing ball control game under that massive pressure. That's why it was a great game. That's why this was better than, you know, Arkansas winning back in the 90s in a 50-point game. Yeah, that's why this was a good game. It was actual, proper, not sloppy, not nervy basketball.
Yeah, Luke Hancock going 5 for 5 from 3-point range. Of course, there was what's his name? Ware, the guy who broke his leg, had the freak, really nasty leg,
Oh my
broken
gosh.
leg.
The
Remember?
viral leg break, the Joe Theismann for the viral.
Russ Smith, Peyton Silva, Siva, Jang. On the other hand, on the other side, you had Hardaway, you had Glenn Robinson, Trey Burke, and just good players, and then there was a start with I gotta love that name too, Spike Albrecht. Comes, I think it was 4 threes in the first half or something like that, and
That was, I mean, with all the names that were being kicked around before this game, I remember, watching Twitter during this first half, and, who would have thought that Spike Albrecht
Spike Albrecht, yeah, and
would have been
then,
trending,
exactly, and so that's it just totally deserves to be up there, and I mean Louisville has a big piece of my heart too. They this was their first, this was their third title, okay, but their first since '86, and that was never Nervous Purvis, and so, and I really liked those teams back then. That was a good, that was a good time. They ended up beating Duke, who I, at that time really, really liked a lot. And but yeah, never Nervous Purvis. Now you have the next group, Luke Hancock, and I think I said after the game Luke Hancock's going to be playing in Europe. Well, we guess it would be 14-15.
Oh, so that's your Givoni-like prediction?
They beat LSU in the semifinals. Never Nervous Purvis. Kenny Payne, Billy Thompson, Milt Wagner. Oh yeah. Sorry. All right. So that's number five. Number four story. The format change. I guess first we'll start with the name. We'll start with the name. FIBA changed their world championship to the FIBA Basketball World Cup. Among other things, they also changed the format to qualify for the World Cup, instituting these classification system with a football soccer like windows. Where teams play, I think, didn't it get announced? It was 10-day windows or 9-day windows, I think is what it was. Can't remember exactly, but whatever, 9-day windows where teams would be, release their players, and then they're going to play qualification games for the World Cup. So we've talked at length about this a number of times on the show. Where do you want to start?
Okay, well, first of all, I'll say, as far as like renaming it the FIBA World Cup, okay, sure, why not? I mean, Jesus, they got an international baseball tournament which is called the World Cup. Okay, if they're gonna call it that, all right, fine, call it that. Everything else, we've talked about this on the show before. I waver between really disliking and loathing, and I think today I loathe it. I mean, again, look, I would say first and foremost, soccer is not basketball, and basketball is not soccer, okay? Yes,
Breaking
soccer
news on Taking
football
the Charge
has it.
podcast.
Yeah, I know, but somebody has not informed the FIBA people this, I think. I mean, yes, soccer football has a great international format, but equally, that thing's been in place for decades, okay? And it's not just a question of scheduling and transporting players and working out insurance issues, although that's going to be a lot of fun, I'm sure.
Oh, gee. And
It's
that
not
makes it
just
all
about
expensive too. That makes it that much more expensive because
right.
you have to release them for more a number of times and not just once.
Well, okay, but see, here's where I'm going with this. Football clubs now are willing to do this, okay? Through the decades, they have been conditioned to do this, okay? Also, you've got in the football sphere, you don't have this one overwhelming power looming over everything. Yeah, sure, Brazil is dominant, but they're not calling the shots at FIFA headquarters. Now, over here in basketball, you do have a monolithic power. Okay, and the result of these, and I've talked about this before too, the result of this format change is going to be a disproportionate amount of power given to certain NBA owners who say, no, I don't want you to play. You know, it's not even a question now of, well, I'm thinking about testing the free agent market in the summer, so I don't think I'm going to play national team. You know, a la Nikola Pekovic. You know, it's not even a question of that anymore. It's a question of, okay, now this breaks down, like, we know that there's a window in February. There's one in the summer. But what's the third window? In the fall?
No, November.
November, right. So okay, the All-Star break will work out in the new format's favor. Okay, but you're talking about those other two where the NBA season is just getting started, and then when the NBA season is in the playoffs. You know what I mean? How can this be good? How are teams going to release players at this time for these tournaments? And again, like we were talking about earlier, I think the result is going to be you're going to get a lot more Mexicos. You're going to get a lot more Finlands in top tournaments. You know, teams that are able to draw from their national leagues, who are able to get the Pateria components, who will drop anything to go play for that team, you're going to see a lot more of those teams getting through into final events.
So it's November, February, June, and September.
Yeah, see, June?
Well, June is after the NBA is done.
Just after, right?
Yeah, yeah. But then, you know, the players that are done could then go to a, quote, national team camp or something like that.
Yeah. Okay, so that doesn't really change.
You're not going to have probably your finalists.
Okay, but that, okay, so that window doesn't change. But that November one, I mean, that's halfway through the EuroLeague season.
Yeah, dude, I know, man.
You know, that's just starting the NBA season. Who's going to give up their players for that?
That's the start of the NBA season, November. So maybe they, you know, but you can't start the NBA season later. Maybe you start the NBA season earlier and take the break. Maybe that's what they're going to do.
In November. Wow. I can't. You have the first All-Star game.
No.
You're good. The one interesting bit.
Maybe they have the D-League against the players that are still in it.
the one interesting thing that I did come away with from this, I brought this up on an earlier show as well, is that one interesting effect will be that ultimately what you'll probably get is NBA All-Star Weekend becoming an American event. I mean, if this is time off and this coincides with your national team play, I'm sure that's what happens. Any guy like Jonas Valanciunas, who's not on the All-Star team, is going to go play during that break back home in Europe. And I think that's what's going to happen is, you know, given that Team USA is going to automatically qualify repeatedly, and they won't have to compete in these windows, that I think ultimately that's what you're going to see. It'd be an interesting marketing situation at very least.
The federations are supposedly should be interested in this, I think, according to FIBA, because it gives them a better chance to market their national team players rather than throughout the entire season, rather than the entire year, rather than just in the summer when they say FIBA that you know, they are also competing with the soccer football national team.
But if you look at it like this, if you look at it like this, let's say, okay, let's take for an example Fenerbahce. Okay, how much money are they getting out of Bogdan Bogdanovic? You know, how much is he bringing to them in terms of gate wins, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera? Okay, how much is the national team gonna get? Or how much is that club going to get from a national team that employs Bogdanovic during a break? Far less, if anything. You know, why is it in Fenerbahce's interest to promote another national team? when he's their alpha dog in the middle of the EuroLeague regular season? Why? What's the motivation there?
Because FIBA wants it.
Yeah, well, FIBA Europe and FIBA have a lot of problems anyway. So you know, it's going to be a hard sell for the cynical FIBA Europe to convince the even more skeptical clubs of this, you know.
Yeah. There's also the qualification for the Olympics, and then the fact that it's been changed to 17, and although I guess maybe 17 was already back to 2012 was what that was introduced, that they switched the schedule to 17, and then the one thing that this does do, all of this format, it does give the players one summer off every 4 years, you know. So there is that. The senior team players saying, you know, let's you know, put that qualifier in there. The senior
and even when they are in qualifying rounds, it shortens their season, right?
Because you assume that
not every NBA guy is going to make the trip in November and February and June.
This is definitely, I think, as we get more and more information, they just released the windows, the length of the windows, which was, I believe it was 9 days. They just released that information. And so these, you know, as the details come out, you know, more and more, and then if we, you know, maybe Silver's on board with this, you know, maybe that's the reason why they went ahead with it. Maybe Silver is on board with it.
Well, I think that tacitly the NBA has to be in agreement with such major moves.
That's what I'm saying. And maybe that's why they talked to Silver about it and said, listen, you know, this is what we're considering. Are you guys on board with it? You know, or are you on board with it? And then will you then push for it? You know?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter if the NBA is for it. What matters is the end result as far as like players and teams. Now, NBA knows that Team USA will be fine. You know, and they figure that, I guess Canada can figure it out, but they didn't figure it out.
If
you gave NBA the choice, if you said, okay, what's more important to you, the Minnesota Timberwolves or, you know, Nikola Pekovic's national team, what do you think they would choose? I mean, you know, they're just, you know, Adam's
going to choose FIBA.
Adam Silver is just representing 30 business interests. He's not necessarily representing basketball.
They're going to choose FIBA. Everybody chooses FIBA. with that, let's take a break. Let's listen to some music before we hit the top three.
It's the only time to let you find some peace of mind. I know I'm disappointed, but I could find someone to cheer. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Fran Frischella from ESPN College Basketball. You're listening to Taking the Charge.
Welcome back to the Taking the Charge podcast. We wish you a happy New Year's Day with a track called New Year's Day by Mid-State Orange. That's a band not of New Jersey, but rather Australia, bringing the 2007 track, which is actually a cover from the Australian psychedelic era of 1966 to 1970. Those were good days. At the end of the show, you'll be hearing The New Year by singer-songwriter Sebastian Duclos of France. That one was recorded in 2009. You can get these tracks and lots more songs not about holidays on freemusicarchive.org for use in podcast or online. And now, back to Taking the Charge.
Thank you, Wolfman Oz.
Yeah, Happy New Year from the Wolfman.
Yes, recalling the psychedelic days, huh? The good old days.
Yeah. It's an album. It's crazy because you listen to that track and you would never guess that this was once, you know, a psychedelia track. But this, you know, one of the contributors to the great freemusicarchive.org put together a double disc of songs that had been produced in this four-year period and redone by punk bands and more grunge bands from the modern day. So it's actually a pretty interesting album. If you want to hear music from the 60s that you've never heard before, done in post-90s style, you can check that out at freemusicarchive.org.
Where we get lots of great music.
Yeah, oh yeah. There really is a lot of good stuff on there.
I'm sure, of course.
Every week I'm surprised.
Yeah. Especially when I come up with great.
Yeah, rockabilly stuff. Just can't get enough of that. Just can't get enough of those 30s tracks.
All right. We were at number three. Just taking a look really quick. So, for the first time since 2004-2005, a team repeated their title in the EuroLeague as Olympiakos knocked off Real Madrid 100-88. Man, God, what a game that was too, huh? 100-88 to defend their title. And you know, just looking at the other three teams at the Final Four, even go back to 12, right? So you had Moscow, you had Barcelona, you had Panathinaikos, mm-hmm. and then in 13 you had Real Madrid, Moscow, and Barcelona. Both times, you know, even though they were reigning champions, even last year, you know, both times they were total underdogs.
Yes,
which makes it all that much more amazing.
You said before that. Okay, this is the first EuroLeague repeat since 2005. Okay, that doesn't sound
Maccabi,
that impressive.
Maccabi, right. When they won 2005.
That doesn't sound that impressive, okay? But, you know, that Maccabi team was a machine. You know, they were expected to do that damage. When you look at...
And they reached the final in six the next year as well.
Right. I mean, you look at these great repeat teams of the past. You look at the old Moscow teams. You look at the old KK Split teams. I mean, these
the repeat
teams,
before that is Split.
Yes.
So the Maccabi feat, you know, that hadn't been done since Split won three in a row, 89, 90, and 90, right. 91. And Milano won 2 years before that. Sabona, you know that. So anyhow, keep going.
Yeah, and you know, so the feat itself doesn't happen that often. But this is certainly the first back-to-back Final Four team that went in as the fourth favorite
again
2 years in a row.
Again,
I mean, if you had parlayed Olympiacos to win the championship in 2002 and 2013, you would have made what, a few hundred times your money.
You'd be coming to us to sponsor the show.
Right, exactly. great repeat, done in fantastic fashion. The people who are at the game will want to tell you that this was another brilliant comeback. Not really. Olympiacos was down after the first, but there wasn't that sort of question that that they would compete through the remaining three quarters like there was in 2012, just done in fantastic fashion. Spinulis, after an off game in the first round of the Final Four, really, you know, showed why he's the leader of this team, showed why he has the reputation that he has as another, you know, great player without a fantastic NBA career from Europe. The game also produced probably my favorite moment of 2013. A lot of people have the Ray Allen game-winning shot in game six as the greatest moment. Great moment, and can't deny it, you know, and in probably the favorite movie that we reviewed this year, He Got Game. So can't deny that, but this block, and I talk about this on the show, this block by Hines in the fourth quarter, you know it's a fantastic moment when the press corps is like, when the press corps does that gasp. It's very funny. You watch games, you watch NBA games, you watch EuroLeague games, and it doesn't matter. You know, Ray Allen can be sinking the shot to win game six, and the press corps looks as though, you know, they're checking out stock quotes. You know, there's like no reaction there. But on this play, I mean, we took notice. The press corps took notice as one. It also produced one of my favorite images of the year, maybe my favorite basketball-related image of the year, which was EuroLeague.net, of course, a couple days after this victory, had a lovely picture of Vasilis Spinulis holding the trophy and giving the traditional peace sign sort of backwards. Now, I don't know if this was supposed to be a subliminal message from Vasilis to the fans, but I note that EuroLeague.net corrected this picture soon after a Mr. Hein reported the cultural implications, let's say, of this picture.
Yeah. It was just, you went into the Final Four, you're thinking, you know what, you know everybody's talking like, okay, who's going to win, Real Madrid, they're so strong this year, but Barcelona so deep and all this other stuff, is Moscow going to be able to do it or not, and nobody's even, and the thing about Olympiacos was like, man, they're not going to be able to do it again. You know, it's like that was like the sentiment. Everybody had the sentiment. Oh, they're not going to be doing it. Even though everybody was back. Plus, they have, but you know, they didn't have the same coach. You know, Bartokas was new. You know, and that's it's one thing to repeat, but what makes this thing that much more crazy is that they repeated with a new coach. Okay, almost all the players, almost all the players were the same, but they had a new coach. You know, and.
Yeah, now look back at those repeats and find one with that changes coach between the two. You can't.
I'm not even gonna look. But there's not gonna be many. There's
happened.
Yeah, I would doubt that more than it's happened more than once. Other than this, it may have happened once. You know, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, back in the '50s.
Yeah, maybe back then. You know,
certainly not in the modern era. Certainly,
the modern era hasn't happened that often.
No.
You know, you say modern
era. Despite the fact that coaches are switched around so much more frequently nowadays than.
You know, I mean, you look even at like Moscow's run where they went to four straight finals, right? That was Messina.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's like that's what amazes, you know, and that's why everybody's like, oh, they're not going to be able to do it again. You know, if Ivkovic maybe was there, you know, whatever, you know, the old hat, the old man, the maestro and all this other stuff. But then, you know, it's like there's no way he's going to do it again. You know, with these strong other three teams. And
but yeah, the field looks stronger. Of course, nobody was counting on, you know, Šeško to completely not show up for that first match that I'm still steamed about, just from a fan perspective. Yes, still, yeah, I admit it. You know, nobody was expecting that, and they were taken a bit more seriously. I noted that going into the 2012 Final Four, that Olympiacos started at 20-1 dogs, and in this one they started at 13-1 dogs at the sports book. So they were being taken a little bit more seriously.
Sure, but the field, of course.
The field in general seemed a bit stronger in 2013. Of course, in 2012 it was taken for granted. I think CSKA went in as a 1-2 favorite to win the whole thing. We took it for granted that the Kirilenko-led monsters were going to win that tournament. So I think the field was a little bit stronger in 2013 overall. But, you know, there's just, I mean, nobody outside of Greece had these guys.
I don't even know the guys in Greece had them.
nobody. Wow. You know, the homers.
Yeah, of course.
The guys with the drums. Yeah, they thought they were going to win.
Hats off. I mean, just that was absolutely amazing. You know, first, and then you were like, oh man, they've made it back to the final. Maybe they could do it. Yeah, but Real Madrid is so strong and all this other stuff. And, they finally beat Barcelona, you know, in the semis and all this. And then it was like whatever it was, I think 17-point deficit or something like that. And then they do the comeback too on top of everything else, you know.
Sure. Why not?
Yeah, make it really special. Yeah,
interesting. Yeah.
Okay. So obviously number three, number two. So looking, the Lakers had done it already back in 9 and 10, where they repeated the title. But we're putting LeBron James and Ray Allen and Wade and Bosh repeating in a pretty good finals as well. I was actually really disappointed that I missed Game Six, which was really just a great game too. I was traveling that day and I don't remember where I was traveling from, but anyhow, I was traveling that day and I missed the game six and I was really, really disappointed that I missed that. So the fact that they repeated, we put that as number two. Why don't you take that?
Okay. Probably not as historical as the Olympiacos repeat. But I'll tell you what. The 2013 NBA championship. Yeah, indeed. It was a pretty good series, Dave. It basically showed what is great about the NBA format. In a way that previous championship series haven't necessarily done. Okay, the Celtics-Lakers matchups, okay, those were great. Those were great for the game. Those were great series in general, except for Game 7 on that last one. That wasn't too pretty. But in general, you know, these were good for the sport internationally. You know, these were good series, whatnot. But this one was unique in that, I mean, okay, so I'm watching the playoffs and I'm a Laker guy, so I'm watching my Lakers get egregiously bounced from this thing. And I think that I felt, when I realized it was over for my guys, what a lot of other fans of eliminated teams felt, and that was this. If there is justice, this final will be San Antonio versus Miami. Okay, that's what we need. Okay, we figure Miami's going to come out of the East. Okay, and we figure that they're doing the traditional NBA, you know, 3-year cycle, you know, where you do the three-peat, or at least you gun for the three-peat, and then, you know, the team becomes something else or whatnot. Okay, so we figure they're in that apex or whatever. Who better to face them? Who better to face them than that team that keeps coming back? Then that team, when we don't know who's going to win the West, wins the West, the San Antonio Spurs. That team, which is a four-time champion, you know, who better to face off against Miami? And we got it. And then not only that, we got a fascinating chess match between these coaches. You know, Eric Spoelstra, who is a guy that I have always given the short shrift to until this series, against, you know, Pops, who is, you know, Probably. I mean, is there a question that the best NBA coach right now, the best coach in the game, one of the top two or three in the world, all things considered, you know, just fantastic chess match, fantastic things happening in this series, different players stepping up, you know, you got
Danny Green.
Right. Danny Green becoming established as a dangerous weapon all of a sudden. You know, you've got guys like Kawhi Leonard just playing out of their mind on the boards for the Spurs. And you know, again, just great format. You have the final two games, you know, go down to the last shot. The final two games, you have those iconic moments. Unfortunately, in the case of Tim Duncan, that didn't happen. But these, you know, and in the case of Ray Allen, did happen. You have, you know, in those final two games, you have Duncan and Parker, one of the greatest tandems, you know, that we've seen at least in the past 15, 20 years, bringing their game, you know, Duncan with his 30 and 17, you know, Parker with just the assists and the steals in game six. So key to this game. And of course, over everything, you have the greatest player of the generation, LeBron James, being put to the test and succeeding, you know, with that. It's just a giant 37 in
overtime
the
overtime
too. And yeah, an overtime in game six, and which of course, you know, sort of fostered the question here on Taking the Charge. What is it about game six? You know, what is it in a seven game series, whether you're talking basketball or baseball, or I suppose even hockey, what is it about game six that so many great things happen in game six? I mean, of course, you know, of course, what it is, you know, one team on the brink of elimination and the other on the brink of a championship. That's what it is. But again, here's another great game six for the ages. And to say that means a lot because, you know, so many great game sixes. Just a wonderful championship series that really showcased why I think the NBA may be the premier, you know, sports league. I mean, maybe Premier League football, maybe. But this series, the point is, this series showed why people all over the world love the NBA.
Just a fantastic story, and it was a joy to watch, without a doubt. You know, I mean, this was wake up in the middle of night material, for sure, for us Europeans. Okay, our number one story. If you haven't guessed it yet, I'll give you 3 seconds to think about it. All right, that's enough. Yeah, it been a long time for Tony Parker, but he finally was able to get the European Championship Eurobasket crown, knocking off Lithuania in the final. Also getting the Spanish back, Spanish monkey off their backs, coming back in a great semifinal to beat them in the to reach the final, you know, this was clearly, you know, Tony, really Parker, just totally being on a mission, and finally getting it done. You know, a really good tournament. Of course, we always say that it was long, but the Eurobasket really enjoyed it, and you know, it was good. It was nice to see, you know, Parker, and he showed a lot of humility. You know, it was really reflective. You know, we had the post game press conference on the show back in September. We played that. You know, really showed a lot of humility and reflection on what everything. That he had done and what it meant, and you know, had the NBA titles, but this was one that, you know, was just obviously means that much more. You know, knocking off you know, Spain, I think it was a double digit lead at halftime, if I'm not mistaken. You know, France had lost to Germany in the first game, and you know, people were kind of questioning them, and you know, you know, just in general, you know, Spain, whether or not they were going to be able to do it without some of their big guns, and Croatia was making their mark with sort of the next guard of their, you know, and there was the Italian run, but just the total culmination with France and Lithuania in the final.
This needed to happen. Okay, this was the year of Tony Parker. I see that Sports Illustrated, which, okay, granted, they usually go American-centric. They just gave Sportsman of the Year to Peyton Manning of the Denver Broncos in the NFL. But this easily could have been Tony Parker. I mean, you know, he's one shot away, not even his own shot, from becoming a five-time NBA champion. You know, I'm sorry, four-time NBA champion. You know, he's one shot away. Nevertheless, he's one of the best players in one of the finest, you know, seven-game series we've seen in decades. Maybe, you know, since before Jordan, maybe. You know, here he is. He's doing that. Okay. So he's adding that piece of hardware to the championship rings that, you know, for Tony has been so important for so long. You know, here's a guy who's among the top, 10, 15 players in the world. He doesn't have to give up the body every year to play on Team France. He doesn't have to. This team might succeed without him, you know, and maybe not to this extent, of course, but, you know, they might go far. They might be fine without him. They won't be on the podium necessarily, but they might be fine without him. And yet he gives it up. You know, he actively, you know, pursues other players to come back to the team. You know, he's bringing that cachet from the NBA and getting his friends in the NBA to create almost the all NBA team for Team France in these past few years. And it's just great to see that devotion get paid off. I mean, talk about a guy who's playing not only for his team and his country and himself, you know, to be fair, but also for the fans. You know, this is a guy who plays for the fans. You know, this is a guy who really is aware, I think, of his place in the game. And so, you know, absolutely kudos to him. It couldn't have happened to a nicer guy. It couldn't have happened to a better guy, a more deserving guy, this European championship.
Without a doubt, I'll agree with basically everything, everything on that. The one thing that I think this kind of might lead now him to, first of all, he played at the Eurobasket in 2001, 2003, 2005, 2007, 2009, 2011, and 2013. So that just shows the commitment that he had. I just wonder now if a little bit of this, you know, there's obviously the NBA and the Spurs, you know, drive. But I wonder now if this maybe kind of makes it even more important for him to maybe get the title at the next level. You know what I mean? He made it to the Olympics for the first time in 2012. You know, they lost that. You know, that was another time when they lost to Spain in the quarterfinals. You know, France, you know, really haven't done a lot at the World Cup. You know, Spain will obviously be considered one of the favorites for 2014, along with the United States. But obviously, you know, you have him, you have all the centers who didn't play in Slovenia. You have Batum, you know, so if they come, then you have Batum, you know, Ajinka, who stepped up his game. You know, is this he's not going to be there for 14. But I wonder if now it's like, well, you know what? The other thing that's missing is the Olympics, you know? And I just wonder, maybe that's like the last thing in his treasure chest that really needs to be gotten. And this gives him that extra motivation to say, I finally got this. And not only did I knock off Spain, but I also got my Eurobasket title.
Well, after this, I think even going into this tournament, it struck me that perhaps Tony Parker is somehow one of these secretly ultra competitive guys. You know, somehow he's one of these, you know, Jordan-esque performers or Kobe performers or Drazen Petrovic performers. You know, these guys that never stop thinking about winning the next thing. You know, you wonder if he's not this guy. Now my guess on this is going to be solidified by whether he actually plays in the game right now. Because look, he could quit right now. He could quit right now and say, I've taken France to the peak that they've ever reached.
Well, he's not going to play this summer at the World Cup. But I imagine he will be at Eurobasket 15 in Ukraine because he wants to get back to the Olympics. And then I think he'd want to. And then after that, I think it's going to be over for him national team-wise.
But you think that he would play in 2016, right?
If they make it to the Olympics, he's going to be there if he's healthy, without a doubt.
Okay, I think that if he plays in 2015 and 16, I think this answers my question. I think that this guy wants to win. Now of course, a guy like Dirk Nowitzki, who spent so many years, spent so many summers with Team Germany, Andrei Kirilenko, who spent time with Team Russia. Of course, these guys want to win for their national team, too.
Well, it's kind of like what it's good, continue.
But I mean, it's like Parker at this point, he's showing that he's on that other level. Again, this is a guy not quite on the same string, but this is a guy who during the lockout went and played for Asheville. You know, he didn't have to do that. He didn't have to like ride on a bus with a French team, but he did. And I think, you know, a lot of that is for the fans. A lot of that is for his business interests. Let's be honest. But I think a lot of that is just this competitive drive that some psychotic top level players have. You know, I really think it is. I really think he just wants to play and win all the time. And I think that we'll find. I think I'll get confirmation on this in 2016, but we'll see.
He said it. He said it at the press conference. I think he said it at the press conference. He says like, you know, I was really in 2011 and the Eurobasket final. I was really just happy to finally get to the final, and Spain just killed us. And this time, there's like no way this is going to happen. And I think there's going to be that sort of the same sort of feeling at the Olympics. If they get to the Olympics, which I assume they probably will, but if they get to the Olympics, saying then, you know, in 12, you know, we made it to the Olympics and we were kind of happy to be at the Olympics. This time we actually want to do something, you know.
Wow.
At the Olympics. Yeah. Yeah.
But then you're talking about getting past teams like Argentina. You know,
but that's what
and a possible monster in Croatia in a couple of years.
We'll see where they are. But
Well, definitely one to watch. But as for 2013, Tony Parker can certainly pat himself on the back.
Our story of the year, 2013, yes. France and Tony Parker finally hoisting the trophy.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's the show then. We definitely look forward to a fun 2014. There will definitely be some great stories that we can't even imagine right now.
You got any resolutions, Dave?
Do I have any resolutions? Just watch lots of live basketball.tv.
Yeah, I think I could say that, but I'm going to get a little bit more specific. I'm going to stop devoting so much quality time to CSKA Moscow, especially in the fourth quarter, and I'm going to start spending a lot more quality time with Real Madrid.
Yeah. I think that's probably a good one.
I think this. I'm beginning to suspect that this may be a special team, and I'm really early on. I'm really sort of imagining a Final Four with at least Fener, Olympiacos, and Real Madrid.
Yeah, I mean, the The EuroLeague season, man, they don't wait. They're starting up tomorrow already.
Yes.
So,
yes.
You know, you don't have to wait too long, too much longer. You know, it's been, what, 2 weeks, I guess?
It's barely two weeks.
No
wimps EuroLeague this year, that's for sure.
Barely 2 weeks break. Not even 2 week break, because they played on the 20th and they play tomorrow. So,
yep.
Joy 14, it's starting already. thank you very much for everybody who has listened to the show and who listens to the show, not who have just in the past, but also who still do. We totally appreciate it. We want to hear from you guys. We want to hear what you have to say about the show. Give us topics to talk about. You know what I mean? Obviously we could talk our ears off and your ears off. although I think the last two shows we both were pretty safe, under 2 hours, I would imagine. You know what? Here's a resolution: to read more fan email.
All right. Which implies that we'll be getting much more.
How's that? Hopefully that works.
That's fantastic.
Okay, Oz, thanks for a great 2013, and look forward to...
Oh, you're very welcome, Dave, to you too. I wasn't expecting that, but...
And it's been a pleasure as the last quarter of 2012 was. So I look forward to another 52 episodes of Taking the Charge in 2014. good luck with 2014. May it be a good one for you and everybody else, and we'll catch you next week.
This city had so much to give. We only found its worthless face. Fascist friends and not cases. Quiet ends and lock leaving. It is you who has done all the things that have helped me to stay strong. Strong.